Tough Voice to the Church, declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host and guests and are not necessarily those of the Information Radio Network, its affiliates, stations, or advertisers.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and this evening for 2 hours are going to be the views of Wayne LeBaron. Now, Wayne LeBaron is a health physicist. He's worked as a health officer. He has a great deal of knowledge and understanding about radiation and radiation illness, and certainly he was the knowledge that was used, his ideas were used in the DVD we are offering entitled Sheltering in Place. What do you do if there was a question of a nuclear or chemical or biological attack? I mean, what would you do to protect yourself and your family? Let me just share a story with you. Certainly over in Israel, why there's a great deal of danger today of a chemical or biological attack on that country. In fact, traditionally, everyone in Israel had a gas mask to protect themselves in case of a biological or chemical attack. But, of course, that threat is far more real today than ever before, because all of the indications that I've been able to determine from rather extensive studies, and you can check this out, but I've talked to key people. Gore Dold, who was the former Israeli ambassador to the United Nations, and people associated with Israeli intelligence, who, you know, in the course of conversation sometimes when you're talking to people, why, you can just ask a leading question, and before they think of the implications, why, they'll tell you the honest answer. And, of course, one of those issues is what happened to Saddam's weapons of mass destruction. We know he had them because the United States government gave Saddam the chemical and biological material that he was going to use to build those weapons with. And apparently, shortly before the American attack, they were taken on trucks in large convoys into Syria and buried in underground tunnels. And Syria has all of those chemical and biological weapons built with, of course, American equipment. And, of course, they have said that they have certainly chemically and biologically tipped missiles aimed at Israel today. So the Israelis, of course, want protection for themselves and their families. But Barak, who is the defense minister, who's a traitor to Israel, has actually gone around and at gunpoint picked up the gas mask from the Israeli people, promising them he was going to refurbish the gas mask and return them, of course, in improved condition. And despite the fact that all of the advisors over there insist that he, you know, give the gas mask back to the Israeli people, he refuses to give them to all those who are foolish enough to have turned in their gas masks. And a significant part of the Israeli population has nothing to protect themselves with if there were to be a chemical or biological attack. And you have to ask yourself why that would happen. I mean, that just doesn't make sense. But then, here in the United States, there are actually medicines that the Army had developed, the Office of Homeland Security had developed to protect people against nuclear fallout, radiation illness. A private company raised $100 million, developed a medicine that worked, and then the Army refused to buy any until we had a nuclear attack. Well, you have a nuclear attack, you can't get the medicine out for a year, and millions of Americans would die, which really doesn't make sense. But then a lot of what's going on today doesn't make sense, and so we're going to explore what you could do to begin looking after yourself. And Wayne has a lot of great ideas. This is going to be a very important program. If you have a chance, record it. Otherwise, you may want to get this program and just keep it on hand and start thinking what you can do to look after yourself. Because believe me, here in America, they have no intention of protecting you. Well, Wayne, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Thank you for having me on your program.
Well, why don't you just tell our listeners just a little bit about your background and how you got involved in this.
Okay. I studied at Southern Utah State University for a time, and then at Utah State University, majoring in microbiology and physics. I went to work not long after that at the National Reactor Testing Station in Idaho as a health physicist. And then after receiving more than enough radiation, I was going to be confined to a desk job, which I couldn't handle. So I went to Montana and worked for the Montana State Health Department. Previous to that, I married a lovely lady from Idaho, and we have, through the course of our marriage, we had five children, three boys and two girls, all grown and away from home. And unfortunately, my marriage only lasted 44 years. She passed away from cancer in early 2002. After that, I thought I might retire, and instead I have written some books. I have done some work with various groups with respect to preparedness, and one of those projects was with my dear friend Kevin McDonald, who used to be a movie maker in Hollywood. And he moved away because he didn't like the environment in which to raise his children. So he lives now in Orem, Utah, and that's where we met. And one evening, talking about my background and his concerns, we were talking about what people could do, what people should do, but often don't, with respect to preparing their families for many different kinds of disasters. And suddenly he brightened up and he said, you know, we could make a video out of the information we have. And are you willing? And I looked at him and I said, yes. So the product of that conversation is the DVD, which Kevin McDonald produced, and I was a technical consultant. And the title of it is Sheltering in Place, 1.5 hour long. It is simple. And when people view that, listen to it carefully, many come away with the idea that...
No, let's just hold that thought there for just a moment. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Wayne LeBaron. And he was just saying that he was a health physicist and had worked certainly for various departments of government, got a great deal of radiation during this, got a job, and worked for a time as a health officer in Montana. And since his retirement, why, he's been writing books, but more recently, why, he and another one of the guests we've had, Kevin McDonald, had put together a DVD called Sheltering in Place, which really it's rather short. It's only perhaps half an hour, but it gives you an idea of what the things that you should be doing that to protect yourself and your family if there is a chemical, biological, or nuclear attack. And there's a great deal you can do, but nobody's going to tell you, and certainly FEMA is not going to tell you, and the Office of Homeland Security isn't going to tell you, but this is a very important DVD, and of course it is available through Radio Liberty. But Wayne, you go ahead, pick the story up from there.
Okay. I think maybe we ought to back up just a little bit to the 50s and 60s and 70s. During those years of the Cold War, the federal government came up with shelters, that is, fallout shelters. They stocked them with barrels of water, with supplies, with food, and with instructions. And over the years of the Cold War, they sat there and they were allowed to deteriorate. And they are no longer usable, no longer viable in any way. And in effect, due to some of the recent past disasters, the essence of the matter is the federal government cannot protect you. If you're going to make any preparations for yourself and your family, you should start now. In view of the DVD Sheltering in Place, we tried to decide what is really best. And of course, the very best protection, at least for a nuclear attack, is a fallout shelter under the ground with filters, with sustainable supplies. But that same fallout shelter under the ground with the filters and the supplies would be a death trap in the event of a poisonous gas attack. Because gas is heavier than air and would settle into low places like basements. The first thing we need to understand is that if we have a poisonous gas attack, the best place is not the basement of your home. Video really tells us that it's impractical unless you have a lot of money and a lot of time. It's impractical to have a deep bomb shelter. The cost is from $20,000 to $50,000, and then the filters on top of that are something like $2,500. And how many times as you as families have you moved during your married lifetime? I have moved 6 or 7 times. I couldn't afford a blast shelter in each one of the areas where I lived. So Mr. McDonald and I came to the conclusion that there's a lot of things that people can do to protect themselves against terrorist attacks. And some of these might be very surprising to you. Doctor, did you have any questions that you wanted to specifically...
No, I want you just to go ahead and talk here and just okay. Give... Believe me, if I have questions, well, you'll hear from them, and later on, perhaps in the second hour, we'll open it up for questions from the audience. But I just want you to share your thoughts, on what people should do. And, of course, one of the best things you can do is be prepared to shelter yourself and protect your family right where you live.
That's exactly right. You take a look at the disaster in New Orleans, Katrina, and even the, quote, I don't think it was a disaster, at the town surrounding Three Mile Island when they had the core of one of their power reactors start to go into criticality. There was total panic. In fact is, at Three Mile Island, the reactor containment vessel actually held in the radiation, and what little went up through the stacks was about 15 millirentkins of radiation, which was not a common daily dose when I worked at the National Reactor Test Station as health physicist. The disaster came because the people were not properly informed.
And because, of course, the media really did everything they could to frighten them to death, and, oh, my goodness, we could see this hydrogen cloud, the hydrogen gas was escaping, and it really was a media event. It was very carefully timed to go along with a new movie with Jack Lemmon and, of all people, that great patriot Jane Fonda. It was called the China Syndrome. It was almost like somebody had orchestrated that whole thing. The movie comes out, they have the Three Mile Island, the media lies to the people and gets us think that the whole country is going to be destroyed because of what happened at Three Mile Island, and yet, of course, far more people died at Chappaquiddick in the back seat of Teddy Kennedy's car and then died at Three Mile Island.
You are so correct, Doctor. That is wonderful reasoning. And one thing I will state to your listeners is that when a reactor goes supercritical, it does not shake like the one in the movie. All of a sudden, everything gets real hot, the alarms go off, and there's a major problem. But the radiation was contained within the Three Mile Island reactor, and The unfortunate problem was that the cities surrounding the reactor were told to evacuate. And the schools let the kids out, locked the doors, and left the kids standing out there with no way to get home. And people were going every which way, trying to get gasoline, trying to get into grocery stores. And there was one death due to the Three Mile Island panic, and that was because of a traffic accident. When a nuclear reactor goes supercritical because of loss of coolant, it is a very dangerous thing. But we have to understand that when a reactor goes down because of a criticality, it does not explode with the force of an atomic bomb. I will tell you what happened in a very small power reactor in Idaho called a stationary low power reactor 1. It was a military reactor, very small, and it was being designed to use up on a Dulein early warning system up in the Arctic to power the radar systems in the early 60s that would detect the launch of Soviet missiles over the pole. We rode by the seat of our pants like a bunch of cowboys back then. And ever since then, the maximum permissible dose per person per day or per year per month has fallen and fallen and fallen. And well, one question which nuclear physicists have not been able to answer is, what is a safe dose of ionizing radiation? Well, no dose is the best, but we all get dosed with ionizing radiation because of it being in granite, coming from the cosmic radiation, and various other sources. Radon gas, which is a daughter product of the disintegration of radium. At this small reactor in Idaho, they were doing maintenance. It was a three-man military crew, and it was at night. And it appears, after many years, that there was a love triangle between one woman and two men that worked at the reactor, and they did hate each other, these two men. And there was notification that the central control rod, which absorbs the neutrons and prevents criticality, should never, repeat, never be withdrawn over 4 inches. This was withdrawn, and they said, which I kind of doubt happened, that it was like a window that was stuck. You pry, and all of a sudden it lets loose. Well, a control rod flew out. There was not an atomic explosion, but a steam explosion. And this was in January 1961, late at night, and it was 17 degrees below zero. And when the reactor went critical, the steam explosion also, the core melted, and there were radioactive gases spreading all over the desert, setting alarms off at all of the other reactor sites and the firehouse, and everybody came out there. The director of health physics, Dr. Doan, called each of the health physicists and said it told us to get out there just as fast as we could, be prepared to suit up and wear warm clothing. We did. And when I got there, it took almost an hour to suit up because they had to give us air packs, masks, hoods, and tape our wrists and ankles and around our neck with the suits. And then they sent us as a team towards the door, and all the way across that dark desert that night, the masks, the hoods with the goggles on, fogged up. You could hardly see anything. You couldn't wipe them off because the condensate was on the inside of the goggles. And one man opened the door. I put a high-range junometer over across his back, and it measured over 500 Rankins. So none of us even attempted to go in, and we ran across back through the desert, and every one of us were not only contaminated, but we received a significant dose. The upshot of that is the ambulances that eventually took the two men in that they discovered that night on shift died. The ambulance was contaminated, con- contaminated the road all the way from the site to Idaho Falls and elsewhere. Part, a good part of the desert was contaminated, and it was a total mess.
Well, because this was just, there was no containment vehicle, was there?
There was no containment vehicle.
Okay, we'll be back here in just a moment with Wayne LeBaron. He's lived this. He understands the dangers of radiation, and of course, I'm sure he's had his share of radiation, and you're going to have to learn how to look after yourself. Well, go ahead, Wayne.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. But they couldn't find the third body. And after a couple of days, they after finally...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Very dangerous, but You know, then what was how many hours are we talking about before it gets down to a 100 Rankins?
It would be only 7 hours later.
It's about 7 hours later. So the radiation does, of course, begin to dissipate very, very rapidly, and of course, before longer down to one Rankin. What? How many hours would that be before you'd be down to one Rankin exposure?
343 hours.
343 hours. So that's a fair length of time. But of course, that's survivable. And of course, unless of course you were to inhale the dust that contained that, or get the particles on yourself, on your body. But go ahead and explain this whole idea that the radiation does tend to dissipate. So, your whole idea is to survive, stay out of the radiation as much as you can during that time. And if you can, why, of course, you can survive the radiation. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. You live in a very beautiful area on the Pacific Coast.
North Shore of Monterey Bay, it is beautiful.
Yes, I've been there.
And let's hope that this is not going to be any sort of a target area. In fact, one reason we came here is because we've always felt that this was not a primary military target.
And I hope it isn't either. I hope no place in the United States is a primary target, but I'm afraid that we do have them. But as this fallout comes down, the natural radioactive decay will result in lower and lower levels of radiation. Now let's turn to a chemical attack. Chemical attack may be one of many different kinds of poisonous gas, from chlorine, phosgene, and sarin, and the likes. But we need to understand that a chemical attack is very difficult to be very successful because of the nature of the materials to be spread, wind patterns, the fact that the aerosol spray for chemical weapons must be very, very small in particulate size, and most of the crop-dusting aircraft spray much larger droplets than that as a mist. If chemicals were to be placed into poisonous chemicals into a reservoir, like botulinum toxin or something else, if it's a very large reservoir for a city, and most of the very large cities are what our terrorists would like to take out, the problem of dilution and the problem of the water purification process, filtering of flocculation with materials, filtering through sand, chlorination, and the like, will remove a great deal of that, and I do not think that to poison reservoirs would be very successful. Plus, it would require so much of the poison that there would be a few tanker trucks lined up dumping the stuff in a reservoir, and I'm sure somebody would be just a little bit suspicious nowadays. Now let's go to a biological attack. First off, I want to indicate to you that the United States has already suffered a number of biological attacks, and they have taken place under the auspices of our government, and this was during the periods of testing, and some were trying to find a bit of information here. This was done back in 1945 to 1986 is the years I have information on.
And of course, the government was simply experimenting on their own people,
right,
weren't they?
Yeah, this a lot of this was done. These tests were biological weapons tests conducted at Dugway Proving Grounds. And this is only maybe half hour, an hour away from Salt Lake City. The prevailing wind going from west to east or southwest, with Salt Lake, Provo, and the whole Wasatch Front in line for the target. They used organisms such as Pastorella, Aspergillus, Bacillus anthracis, botulinum toxin, Brucella melanensis, causing Brucella cirrhosis, hog disease, Clostridium botulinum.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment, because what we're talking about is brucellosis, all sorts of horrible diseases they practice on people here.
Yeah, very common disease. Very common disease.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Wayne LeBaron. Wayne, go ahead, pick up the story.
Okay, after they dispersed these into the atmosphere, there were areas where there were plates and other types of equipment that would record and grow these organisms. There were a number of times that there was quite a rise in the illness. The government said, oh, we're not doing anything out here. All the organisms we have been attenuated. They're very safe. But there was a rise in many of these illnesses around Utah and somewhat eastward. So we've already had some biological attacks by our own government just to test those agents out as biological weapons.
In fact, we have a report called the Rockefeller Committee Report, came out of the Veterans Administration in 1994, that talked about some of those experiments done on Americans. And then we carry another book called The Very Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident, with, of course, a number of sheep had died simply because of these macabre experiments were done by truly irresponsible scientists working for our own government. And, of course, endangering the health of the American people, but you're never going to hear about it. We kept both the Rockefeller Committee report and, of course, the book, The Very Unfortunate Skull Valley Incident. Go ahead, Wayne.
Okay. I wanted to point that out to show you that, let's put it this way. We are in a war against terrorist Muslims. They want to destroy us or convert us. I am a Christian, I always have been, and I will remain one, no matter what. And the sooner our nation realizes, and our government realizes, that we are in a life and death struggle with some real fanatics, the better off we are, because then things will get serious about our protection. But in the meantime, we can look for cyber attacks. That is, attacks against the computer facilities, against the internet. And that could bring America to its knees if it's successful, because we do many, many billions of dollars of commerce with the internet each day. And if that stopped, all commerce would stop. If there is an attack using a radiological dirty device, such as cesium-137 powder, which is easy to find, placed in a container.
We'll pull that right there, Wayne. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, Wayne is simply talking about the possible danger of using a dirty bomb. As cesium could be utilized to create a radiation exposure without the explosion going along with it, or at least only a secondary explosion, traditional explosion, to actually spread the radioactive material. Go ahead, you were talking about, was this, what, cesium dust of some sort?
Yes, what happened is, give you an example. A number of years ago in Goiânia, Brazil, a scrap dealer purchased a, quote, cancer therapy machine, which was stolen from an old abandoned cancer clinic. Somebody broke in, saw the metal, and took it to the scrap yard and sold it. Well, the scrap dealer had his men take this apart, and there was a stainless steel container in which, when they opened it up, were some beautiful blue-green glowing powder. And they saw that it sparkled, and so they rubbed some on their arms and their face, and one man without a shirt rubbed it on his chest. They gave some to their neighbors. The scrap dealer's family, their little girl, and others had this on their body, and a little girl ate some sandwiches, and it was contaminated with this blue-green glowing powder, and it was cesium-137, very, very bad, poisonous radioactive material. The upshot of this is there were people that, this was contaminating people, roads, houses, parks, human, everything. And after the whole thing was over with, they had to bring in American scientists. They had six deaths, a number of serious illnesses, and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that had to be screened just because somebody got into this stuff and didn't know what it was. But the terrorists know what it is, and they know about the other radionuclides. And if there is a radiological device such as that is exploded and spread by a conventional explosive, then the damage may not be too great. We can contain it. But the panic would be horrible. If a very large city was told to evacuate, it could not be successfully done. We are told that our home is our castle. I believe that with all my heart. And I believe it is safer to stay in your home and shelter in place by what the video teaches you. And that means there are four things that you need. You need to seal your house off so that it can still breathe. In other words, you need air. You need water, clean, safe water. You need a supply of food. You need medications that your family might need or have on prescription. And you need communications. The video shows how to do each of those and how to do it successfully.
And, of course, what you're doing is you're using flannel, a strip of flannel with a partially open window, and, of course, with the idea that the air can go through that, but the flannel will filter out certain toxins and other things. Is that right?
That's correct. Now, one thing that I feel is most important is once people seal themselves in their homes, seal the fence, around the doors and the windows and other places, they should not break that seal, especially if we have a pandemic of some sort. Because once the seal is broken, that means that people are there and want in and want to talk to you. Talk to people only by phone or on the internet. Or when the door is totally closed and sealed, do not open it for anyone, because what you're doing, those people have had the ability to do what you will do in protecting your family, but they have not taken the opportunity. You have put your things away, you've learned how to survive, you seal yourself in. Now, if they expect you to open up for them, what you're doing is you're going to contaminate your family with, depending on the disaster, radioactive fallout, a biological entity which may kill you, a source of radioactivity from a dirty bomb, or from a chemical weapon. As far as chemical weapons go, recall that I mentioned that they are heavier than air and will settle in the basements. If there is a chemical attack, keep your family out of the basement. And have a radio with lots of batteries so that you can have a small radio so that you can listen to broadcasts. In fact, there's a couple of walkie-talkies that are very handy even around the house. The other thing is you cannot store too much water, especially if you have small children. Another item of most important concern is we hear a lot about 72-hour kits for emergency. That's enough food and water for 3 days. That just doesn't work. In the case of one of these types of disasters, when you shelter in place, you may need enough water for a month, enough food for a month, even longer. And so you need games, you need something to pass the time away, you need some really good literature to read, and you better be a very close family that can get along, because that's really to prove whether you survive or not.
All right, fine. Well, certainly, if there is radiation, it's at one time, of course, the government had the ability to have actually gotten medicine that would have prevented the severest forms of radiation illness and would have saved millions of lives. And the government got the medicine actually produced, determined that it would work, and then decided, for one reason or another, that they were not going to make this available to the general public. So there really is no good medicine available now to protect the American people, even though for a fraction of what we've wasted on Donald Rumsfeld's product, Tamiflu, why, of course, we could have had something, we don't have it. So what about the use of antioxidants? What about the use of other things to try to protect ourselves from the effects of radiation? What would you suggest from that point of view?
Well, first off, I think you're exactly right. One of the books that I am the author of is Preparation for Nuclear Disaster. I go into the type of food that should be stored according to what families would like. I go into the kind of medicine that should be stored, and in particular if there is a radiation injury, that is the acute radiation syndrome.
Now, what should we have for acute radiation syndrome, should that ever occur?
First off, two main possibilities, the highest probability of death through radiation injury is hemorrhage, and that's one big one because it just destroys the hematopoietic system,
the blood-forming system in the bone marrow, right?
That's right. And the other is there's hemorrhage and infection. Anybody with a very seriously comprised immune system is going to be wide open for infection. And even some of the more common organizations, which are not normally disease-causing in humans, would cause disease if the body is compromised by radiation injury. What I would propose is that if a person has radiation injury, they're going to know it. They may have up to 60 Rntgen, 50, 60 Rntgen exposure, and that's what I had at one time, less than a lot more, but I felt tired. I had a hunger for salt. I wanted to drink a lot of water. But there were some changes in my blood constituents, but not serious enough for me to quit work or anything. When you get into the 100 Rntgen range and up to 500 Rntgen, people very well may sustain radiation injury and come with the full-blown problems of gastrointestinal problems, hemorrhage, loss of hair, and everything else. Vitamin C is one thing that I find is very important.
Now, Chris, would this be taken intravenously? Would this be taken orally?
Orally is fine.
All right, fine. How much would you actually consider taking? Because one trouble with vitamin C is you can't get diarrhea with it, but would you take it up to the point of diarrhea or what?
Well, I would think maybe 1,000 milligrams a day would be a good start.
All right, fine. Well, that certainly is a very good... Go ahead.
Let me tell you why vitamin C is so important. The radiation injury, if you have a radioactive particle that comes zapping out and hits one of your cells, one of the problems with cellular destruction is that when one cell is destroyed, there are peroxides that are formed inside that tissue, and peroxides are very, very detrimental to tissue. And as a result, the peroxide formation and disruption from just one cell may kill an adjacent 100,000 cells. As an antioxidant, this is something that can be fairly well prevented with that, along with a bland diet, lots of liquids, antibiotics, and good, tender, loving care, and conditions for rest. Now, the length of life of a red blood cell is 21 days. And when somebody receives radiation injury in the area from about 100 to 350, 400 Rntgens, this is full body exposure. They will be very sick. After exposure, the more rapid the onset of the symptoms of radiation sickness, the more probable that they're going to not make it.
All right, fine. Can you survive an exposure of 300 to 500 Rankins?
Yes. 500 Rankins is considered the LD50, the lethal dose for 50% of the population.
Right.
The problem with the radiation situation is that they get a massive dose, feel really sick for a few days, and then the symptoms go away. And they feel much better. The nausea, the vomiting, the diarrhea stop. But there's this being tired, this malaise that they have. And then after about 3 weeks, life of a red blood cell, then they really get sick again. And they may develop small hemorrhages under the skin, and their gums may bleed, just a whole host of problems. And it's a very agonizing death. But you can survive it if you stay inside. I should mention one thing. This has to do with how you can prevent injury. After a nuclear detonation, that is a fission or fusion detonation, which levels a good portion of an area, the main worry we would have in fallout is not so much the long-lived products, but the massive amount of strontium, there's tremendous amounts of different radioactive materials. Like there's sodium, radium, strontium, iodine, cesium, uranium, plutonium, and they all have their different half-lives.
How about the radioactive iodine that's getting into your thyroid?
That's the one I want to mention, and this is very, very important. There will be more radioactive iodine 131, which has a half-life of 8 days, more produced by a nuclear weapon than any other product. But after 8 days, half of it's gone. But on the other hand, you still have half of it to deal with. If a person can obtain what they call commonly nuke pills, N-U-K-E pills, or potassium iodide tablets, or sodium iodide tablets, these are sold now pretty much nationwide without prescription. If a good dose is taken 4 hours before radioactive fallout comes to your area, or 4 hours before you are exposed, then the thyroid gland will uptake all the iodine from the potassium iodide or sodium iodide tablets and will be full of iodine. So when the fallout comes containing so much radioactive iodine 131, which is very commonly causes thyroid cancer, the thyroid gland is full of iodine, so it will not take up the radioactive iodine 131. And that is a good prevention. And a family should have enough to last for about a month for every member of the family. I can't tell you how many bottles you would need. You would have to talk to a place that sells that, and there are many of them. Not only California, Utah, but all over the country now.
How many of the tablets a day would you take?
I believe the ones I have, it's two a day per adult, two a day for children, and probably one a day for infants.
All right, fine. We do actually carry the potassium iodide through our ministry, and we think it's an excellent thing just to have on hand, and it certainly stable lasts a good long time.
Yeah, what does it decay into? It is very stable. One thing I should point out with the use of potassium iodate, you should take that with something like tomato juice or fruit juice or some kind of flavored soda pop because it is bitter. But it'll save your life. Now, let's see.
Well, basically, so because we were talking about the bleeding problems, the thrombocytopenia,
yes.
the hemorrhage,
yeah.
And, of course, then the secondary infection that would come following radiation exposure. And, of course, the thing is that the major thing is to get inside so that you do not get that severe radiation. And if you're inside, chances you're not going to get it, especially if you could filter the air. That's the important thing. And you have the flannel there on hand ahead of time. You don't figure you're going to go down to the store and buy it, because there's not going to be any stores open at that time. The last thing you want to do is be going out. That's why preparation is so important. Would you agree?
I would certainly agree, Doctor. Also, preparation is vital. In times of civil unrest, I believe staying in your home and sheltering in place is a better protection.
Right.
How are we for time now?
Well, right now we're going to have to wrap up this segment. Our guest, ladies and gentlemen, has been Wayne LeBaron, and he is, of course, the consultant on the DVD, Sheltering in Place. We think it's important. We're going to have a four-tape set here very soon on civil defense. We're going to have, of course, we have the book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, information on how to build your own little radiation meter, and hopefully we're going to have more sophisticated ones available. We think people should begin making their preparations, because the government's not going to look after you. Well, Wayne, go right ahead. You've got 3 minutes to wrap up this segment of the program.
I urge everybody that listens to watch sheltering in place. Take it seriously. Your home is your castle. That should be your refuge. Time of stress, disaster, and most likely if you tried to evacuate a city, you would not make it. But where would you go? Store sufficient food for at least a month or 6 weeks, at a bare minimum. Store enough water. And that means a lot of water and juices to supplement that. If you find a physician who will provide you with extra medications that you are using with prescription, or give you some prescriptions for some extra antibiotic in the event that radiation sickness or a biological entity gets into your family, that will help. Store things, foods that you will use. Yeah, 72-hour kits are okay for 3 days. Then what do you do? You do, if that's all you have, you do what they did in New Orleans. You suffer and possibly die. God bless this nation. And on 9/11, I feel this was a most appropriate program, Doctor. Thank you so much for having me on with you. And if you find that what I've told you is of interest, I would be available again.
All right. Now, we're going to keep you on for a second hour, so don't think you're going to get away this easily. We really want to actually cover a great deal more during the second hour.
Okay.
These are all things that people need to start thinking about and start trying to understand. We're dealing with a very real threat to America. There are people in key positions of our government that are making preparations to protect themselves, but not to protect the general public. We have to ask ourselves why, just as we have to ask ourselves why the defense minister of Israel, Mr. Barak, has taken the gas masks away from the Israeli people. They have them, they're prepared. The people who work over there in civilian defense are pleading with the defense minister to give the gas masks back to the Israeli people to protect the women and the children. But, of course, the defense minister refuses to do it. We have to ask why, in the same way we have to ask why our Defense Department or Office of Homeland Security has steadfastly refused to purchase the medicine that would save the lives of millions of Americans from a nuclear attack. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time I really need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We, of course, make available the DVD, Sheltering in Place. We think it's very important. The book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, actually put up forward by the Defense Department, and you can pull it down off the Internet, but we carry the book, and in there are the directions for building a radiation meter, and if you want to get the kit to build one of those, why, they are available through Radio Liberty. We carry the book, Making the Best of Basics, which basically tells you how to go about dealing with what happens if you have wheat. What do you do with wheat? Well, you know, how do you grind it? What do you make out of it? How do you live on the essentials that your grandparents or great-grandparents lived on? We're getting so used to just going down to the supermarket and getting whatever we want, but in case of an emergency, believe me, the supermarket shelves would be empty. Begin thinking about this. Hope and pray it never occurs, but believe me, I believe if God is just, he's going to bring terrible judgment on this nation. And we hope that at least our listeners, many of them will survive. We do want to remind you, of course, that we are putting on an all-day seminar, and of course many of the items we mentioned, other items will be available, but our October 28th seminar, it's a Sunday, and we're having it then because many people were unable to come on a Saturday. It will be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course here in the North Shore of Monterey Bay. Got a great lineup of speakers. We do hope that many of you will make it a point to come. And again, the telephone number, how to get your reservations either for hotels or if you're coming for the all-day seminar, lunch is going to be served, is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We hope that many of you out there can come and come in from other areas. We always have a good time, an opportunity to meet lots of people who feel the same way you do about what's going on and to learn much of the latest information. So if you'd like to be interested in coming, remember October 28th, and the number, if you'd like to call, come, and it'd be 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And certainly we're going to do another hour with Wayne LeBaron. And at that time, we're going to have an opportunity to hear, but we'll ask him how you can get hold of his books. He's written extensively on this. He's certainly one of the world's leading experts on preparedness. And we need people who've thought about this. Wayne has a background as a health physicist. He's had radiation illness himself. And, of course, is well aware of so many of the problems that the American people are going to be facing. And, of course, the major thing is you are responsible for yourself. Do not expect that FEMA is going to come and help you. Do not expect that the Office of Homeland Security is going to help you. If you think you get out on the road in your car, what do you do when you run out of gas? Well, believe me, they're setting up their concentration camps all across America, and we're getting calls from people who are seeing old military bases being refurbished in preparation for something. If you'd like to get our information on concentration camps and some of the documentation, we have a 4-tape set on concentration camps. That's audio or CD. We have a concentration camp special where you'll see some of the hearings where people in key positions of government will tell you that there is a plan in the case of a national emergency to suspend the Constitution and put Americans into concentration camps. You get the official government policy on civilian labor in military camps. Just to give us, if you want more information, it's 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, and let me suggest to you a 4-tape set called The Impending Police State. And we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and of course, for the second hour, are the views of Wayne LeBaron, who's a health physicist, and of course, he's the consultant for the excellent DVD, which we carry, called Sheltering in Place. It was DVD is produced by Kevin McDonald, and of course Wayne was the consultant for that, and simply very, very simple things that you can do, and when you see it, you'll be amazed how simple it would be just to have the things on hand to prepare yourself. But the important thing would be to be inside. Certainly much of the radiation will soon dissipate if you're not out in it. Certainly the chemical and biological weapons will dissipate with the passage of time. The last thing, however, you want is to be going out and trying to go to the hospital, and the last thing you want to do is take a vaccination, because of course if you've studied the vaccination programs, you have to understand that sometimes they put things that are very, very harmful in the vaccinations, as they have in many of the African and other countries, things that had a tremendous impact intentionally on the people there. Well, be that as it may, if you want to go, of course, do what you're told, fine, but I believe we have an obligation to look after one another, and certainly look after our families. First and foremost, if you haven't read my material on the emergency model health program, we actually have that up on the internet, and this was legislation in many states that will allow the government, in case of a health emergency, to take away your home, to put you into a concentration camp, to forcibly vaccinate you, and you'll have no comeback at all. The last thing you want to do is fall into their clutches. Well, go ahead, Wayne. Let you pick up the story from there. Have you looked at all into this Model State Emergency Health Power Act?
I have not.
All right, sir. Well,
I'm so disillusioned with what our government does or does not do that sometimes I feel it's hardly worth reading the materials anymore.
Well, the only reason to realize that to read it is, of course, to be forewarned that the last thing you want to do is look to the government to help you, because they have a program and it would do more harm than good, as with so many government programs. Well, let's just pick up on the things that you've been telling our listeners that they should do. What do they really need if they're going to shelter in place?
Right, they need, I would suggest, a 6 week supply of food at minimum. Things that you do not have to cook, or maybe you just could warm them up. I would suggest that a minimum of 1 liter of water a day per person. Now, that's an awful lot of water, but if you don't have it, you may die. The filtering of the air in your home, now you just consider being a week, 2 weeks, a month, or 6 weeks inside your house, with it all sealed up. Things would get pretty tough on you in there. The air would be very difficult to breathe, if not impossible. So you need some clean air. The video shows how to open your windows maybe an inch and a half, and seal both sides of a triple strip of cotton sheeting to go over that, and to be set in place with masking tape or other type of tape on each side, so that the crack will be covered by the cotton.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. And Wayne, of course, is describing this really speaking of cotton flannel. Cotton flannel, isn't it? You're suggesting they have on hand.
Cotton sheeting is even better because it breathes better.
Cotton sheeting, all right. You're talking like a sheet.
Yes, three thicknesses, and everybody has a sheet, so they can tear off a 8-inch wide strip, the full length of the sheet, go up one whole door, and fold it triple and tape it in place along the crack of the door all the way around the door.
All right, fine.
And the same way with your windows. Remember to close the vent in the dryer, and close the vent in any type of fireplace you may have. And that should ensure pretty good air. As I mentioned before, if we have a pandemic, people carrying disease organisms such as viruses or germs, they don't really spread a long ways unless you are in a confined area. In fact, in my experience as a microbiologist, and I was the health officer here in South Central Utah over the health department for some 20 years before I retired, or thought I retired. The most dangerous place is the doctor's office waiting room and the hospital waiting room, because that seems to be where the airborne viruses, droplet infections, spread so many disease germs.
And you were actually a health officer there then in Utah?
Yes, I was for 20 years, Central Utah Health Department.
All right, so at least you've got a pretty good knowledge of what this is all about, and what you're saying is stay away from hospitals, stay away from doctor's offices if you possibly can. That's not where you want to go.
And that's one of the times in sheltering in place that I would recommend you not go to church. The fact is, I gave a talk years ago in my church here in Utah, and I kind of chastised the people who would take their children to church when they were sick. Well, I'm not going to make heaven if I don't take my children, and if I'm sick, we have to go. And I told them how easy it was spread, and why schools are a hotbed for the spread of disease organisms, and that's why some families have colds and sore throats and various maladies all year long because of the kids in school and the kids in church. If your kids are sick, I think it's a disservice to the other members of the congregation.
Hold that thought right there, Wayne. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan and Wayne LeBaron. Chris was a health officer in Utah for some 20 years. And one of the things he stresses is that if you are ill or your children are ill, don't go out and give this disease to somebody else. I mean, certainly going to church, going to school, it was only a means of spreading the disease, and other people maybe take their kids to church or to school. Do not do it. Stay in your house. If there is a disease out there, if there is an epidemic, just stay away from other people. And that's how you're going to avoid getting the disease. So go ahead.
Anyway, after I gave that talk, I had a lot of response to it, and most of it was very, very positive. In fact, not many months ago, a lady came up to me, and she said, I remember when you gave that talk in our church, and she says, finally, someone was brave enough to stand up and tell it like it was. Oh, I did appreciate that. Communications. That's something that you're going to need because you're going to be desperate for information from the outside world as to what is going on, not only in the area in which you live, if you have sheltered in place, but other areas, the political situation, the disaster, what's happening. I would recommend a battery-operated radio, maybe two in case one goes out. They're not very expensive. I would recommend one with short wave. And you can use a small antenna made of some insulated or bare wire put to the back of the radio, strung in your house. You don't have to go outside. But you're going to need to know what's going on in the rest of the world. Now, depending on the type of disaster and the magnitude of it, phones may or may not be working. If they are, so much the better. If there is a massive attack, such as a preemptive nuclear strike on our country, then you can well bet that the phones and most radio stations and the satellites and cell phones will be out. And that is leads me to one of the effects of the use of nuclear weapons. Many people do not realize that there were a lot of tests done not only in the South Pacific, not only in Nevada. The fact is, the total number of tests number over 1,000 between the Nevada test site and the Pacific test. I returned not many, only a couple of years ago, way back to the Marshall Islands. I'd never been there before, but there were still remnants there of the nuclear testing, and some of the islands could still not be lived upon because of the high effects of radioactivity still existing. We don't very often hear that there were some tests in the South Atlantic and some very strange tests in the Pacific. For example, they were very high altitude tests where a missile was fired into the atmosphere and such a height, and then a nuclear detonation took place. The reason for this testing was to determine the effects of electromagnetic pulse. I'm sure many of you have heard that, but may not understand what it is. EMP, or electromagnetic pulse, is a very, very high-speed burst of gamma radiation, and it occurs within a very, very short time, almost nanoseconds. And the danger of this is not humans. There is no known effects of electromagnetic pulse to human flesh or trees or anything else. The effect of electromagnetic pulse is to destroy communications. What happens is the high-speed burst of gamma radiation from a very high-altitude burst of a nuclear weapon, that gamma radiation stays up there and it will degrade high-frequency communications over a long period of time.
Well, how large an area of the Earth would it cover? A few square miles, 100 square miles? How large an area?
Well, if I were an enemy of the United States, and I wanted to take out our command, control, and communication, what I would do would be to launch two nuclear weapons to explode some 300 kilometers above the Earth's surface over the United States. That would effectively destroy almost all communications.
Well, now, of course, would it affect certainly computers and things if they weren't turned on?
Yes. It would certainly destroy all solid-state devices. Way back in the 40s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, and up to the stage of the 60s, most of our communications equipment was vacuum tubes. And then we got into all the solid-state devices, the transistors, the diodes, and all the other little tiny components, which was so much smaller and could do just the same job, but they're very susceptible to electromagnetic pulse. Now, what happens when an electromagnetic pulse occurs due to a nuclear detonation is that electrical current is induced into any type of circuit on the ground, any conductor, above ground power lines, above ground telephone lines, long metal cables, antennas for receiving and transmitting, even metal studs and supports in building, pipes, long pipes, electric wiring, electric conduits, power line towers, antenna feed cables, railroad tracks, and even metal fences. In fact, is the amount of electromagnetic energy induced into those, it carries a current, can be incredible. I can't remember how much voltage would be induced per 1 meter length of wire, but I used to remember until I start to get real old. But what the tests were done, there was a hardtack series of operations over Johnston Island. They fired they touched off a nuclear detonation 77 kilometers in space near Johnston Island. That's over 700 miles from Hawaii, and it affected the high-frequency communications of military and the radio stations and the lights on the Hawaiian Islands. And it happened over, this affected it for several days. There was an Operation Argus, Argus 1 test, Argus 2, and Argus 3, and these were high-altitude tests done in the South Atlantic, where nuclear weapons were detonated about 300 miles altitude, and the results were startling. The degradation of communication was incredible. But now that we have all these solid-state devices, you can just bet that communication would be pretty much down. Now, they're the most susceptible things. I'll paint the bad scenario, and then I'll come up with a solution, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
The most susceptible are the systems that employ transistors, semiconductors, rectifiers, and tube diodes. Computers and power supplies, semiconductor components, alarm systems, intercom systems, even life support system controls, transistorized telephone equipment, and some solid-state receivers and transmitters and solid-state converters and home entertainment systems, TVs, AM and FM receivers, CBs, tape decks, CD players, and the whole bit.
But even if they're not turned on, in other words,
that's
just
right.
Not,
that is correct, even if they're not turned on. As an example, many years ago, a Russian flyer defected and took one of their fighter jets out of Russia and landed it over in the Japanese islands at one of our bases. And when that MiG was inspected, many of the Air Force personnel were standing around laughing at it because the jet had old tube-type radio equipment in. And they thought, oh, these Russians are so far behind times. And then one of the officers said, no, he says, you better think about this. The tube-type stuff for communications is fairly resistant to electromagnetic pulse, but not the stuff we have in our aircraft. So what I'm saying is there is a way to protect your own things, especially those items of electronics that a family would really need to rely on. For example, a radio or two, walkie-talkies, even a cell phone, such things as that. They can be protected.
How would you protect them?
Well, it's very simple, and when I tell people, it's hard for them to believe. You can protect any electronic circuit quite successfully by forming or building what is known as a Faraday cage. There's this man named Michael Faraday that many years ago came up with a device, an electronic device called a capacitor, which was able to store electric current. Electric energy. And
So how would they build one?
Where
would they get one?
You take a 30-gallon garbage container, a metal one, sure it's metal, a 50-caliber ammunition can, a 30-caliber ammunition can, or even a smaller garbage can, or a 5-gallon metal bucket. They all have to be metal. On the inside of those, of any one or all of those containers you wish to use, let's take a 30-gallon garbage can. You can get more electronics in that than you can the other stuff. You would take something like not a real thick blanket, not a quilt, because that's too thick. Or you could use a quilt, but it just takes up more space.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment.
Okay. We'll wait.
Wayne, why don't you go right ahead?
Okay. To build a Faraday cage to protect your electronic equipment, you do this. And I'll use the example of a 30-gallon metal garbage can with a tight-fitting lid. These aren't very expensive to buy. The first thing, take the lid off and take a blanket. Doesn't need to be new or real thick or anything. And push the blanket down so the center of the blanket is on the bottom of the can. And the rest of the blanket is covering the sides with the ends draping out over the top. That forms a nice insulation barrier between the metal and whatever you put in that can. Then you can take your transistor radios, your cell phones, tape decks, and all the other electronic things that you wish to protect, and you put them in that blanket, inside the garbage can, in that blanket, and bring the blanket up on all sides, and do not allow any of the electronic equipment to touch the metal sides inside. You fold the blanket over the top of the materials that you put in the can. You put the lid on. You simply set that on the floor, preferably a concrete floor. It's a better conductor. And that will act as a capacitor. That's why it's called a Faraday cage. And any kind of EMP or other electrical energy will go on the can and down and out. And it will not retain any electricity inside the can. It will be dissipated, and the solid-state devices inside will be protected. There are a number of radio stations around the country, many military radio stations that have been hardened. That is, that the electrical components of their transmitters and receivers and antennas have been protected by the use of a different type of component, electronic component. They're very heavy-duty electronic components, very expensive, not something you would go down to the Radio Shack and buy. But a Faraday cage of any size, 5-gallon metal can with a lid, or any other metal container with a lid, which has the insulating material inside, such as cloth or that, and the electronic components inside of that, folded over, is a good protection. I visited what was called the SVAT company. It was an Air Force installation, and it's up out of Ogden, Utah. You go to 12th Street and turn off the freeway, and instead of going east toward the town, you go west toward the Great Salt Lake. And right at the tip end of the Great Salt Lake is an Air Force base. It doesn't have any airplanes or anything. It's purely a test facility. And at the time I visited there, I had the range safety officer take me in. And they were doing hardening of our Minuteman III missiles. You have the Minuteman nose cones out, their guidance systems and everything. And we had film badges, and they were explaining what they were doing there. And they want our nuclear missiles with our nuclear weapons to be able to fly through any kind of detonation, whether it's...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment, Wayne.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Wayne was simply talking about building a Faraday kit and a Faraday container. It's a 30-gallon garbage can, a quilt there in the bottom of it, and then, of course, putting the things inside so none of them touch the metal, and then folding the quilt in on top of the items you're trying to protect, and then setting the metal can on the cement floor, which, of course, acts as a conductor, and take the electricity away, and that way all of the things that you have will be protected. Wayne was then talking about how certainly he was at an Air Force base where they were actually working on the heads of our Minuteman missiles. You'll be pleased to know most of them have already been decommissioned, so we have very little protection here in America in case of a nuclear attack. We've done away with our MX missiles. We're unilaterally disarming. Doesn't make any sense, but then so much of what's going on doesn't make any sense. But they were certainly very, very concerned about the fact that if we had missiles, and this was some years ago, that they would not simply be incapacitated by flying through the gamma rays that would be up in the stratosphere. Go ahead with your story there, Wayne.
Okay. At the Survivability and Vulnerability Test Center near Ogden, Utah, they were actually using very, very expensive components to harden the guidance systems of our missiles. Now, it's my understanding that most of our missiles have been hardened against the electromagnetic pulse in the event that we do have an attack against us. Electromagnetic pulse, I will repeat, has not been found to be harmful to human beings. You wouldn't even know that it happened. Best example of electromagnetic pulse is in the summer, there's a storm building up, thunderclouds. You have your radio on either in the car or in your house, and there's a big burst of lightning, and you hear a hiss on your radio. That's somewhat like electromagnetic pulse. It's a form of the pulse. But the pulse we're talking about is from very high altitude nuclear weapon detonations, and if two nuclear weapons were detonated 300 miles roughly above the United States, it would destroy almost all of our solid state communications reception gear and many other devices that we have around the homes that are luxuries to us. And we would miss them terribly. So if you have extra things such as cell phones, walkie-talkies, or some radios, receivers that you, or even CBs and that, that and they're good in emergencies, that you want to protect, use that idea of a Faraday cage. And now, I would recommend a book to you. It's a very good book. It's put out by our government. And it's called The Effects of Nuclear Weapons. That will tell you just about everything and probably 100% more than you really wanted to know about them. But it's not very expensive, and it's a government publication, and I'm sure if you just got on your search engine on your computer and typed in that title, The Effects of Nuclear Weapons book, that would come up and show you where you could get it. It's a very good one. I have a book called Preparation for Nuclear Disaster, and that's primarily what I've taken the information from for tonight's program. There is another one called America's Nuclear Legacy that was published, I wrote it, it was published in 1998. Nova Science has both of those books. And this second one is America's Nuclear Legacy, and it tells all the about the nuclear testing, the experimentation that was done, and the horrible things that our government done to some of our civilians. I touched briefly on the fact that there was a lot of testing of microbial organisms put into the atmosphere out at Dugway Proving Grounds just to see what would happen and how far they would disperse. But there were worse things that happened. One of the worst things was that there were infants that were injected with plutonium under a grant from our government. There were something like 600 pregnant women that were injected with radioactive iron just to find out what would happen. And the stories of the horrors of that period go on and on and on.
And certainly they had orphans and they were feeding them plutonium in their breakfast food. And
yep.
Of course, but then of course a lot of this was the German scientists we brought over here under Operation Paperclip. carrying out these macabre and horrible experiments on Americans.
Well,
hold up. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Right ahead there, Wayne.
Okay, thank you. Some of the areas that I think that would be important for your listeners to know would be that during the period of the Cold War, the Soviet Union was a very formidable foe. But at the same time, it was a very responsible enemy as far as its nuclear weapons were concerned. The United States was very responsible in most ways, but there were many, many very close calls. And now with the advent of terrorism, the obtaining of nuclear materials, fissile materials to make nuclear weapons or dirty bombs, is of extreme high priority on the list of the things the terrorists want. There have been thousands of pounds of fissionable material that has been lost from the United States inventory over the many years. And I'm certain there are many, many thousands more pounds of fissionable material that has been lost from the neglect and the poor storage that the former Soviet states had for so long. Eventually, if not already, these materials will find their way into terrorist hands. And the ultimate weapon for terrorists is a nuclear weapon, preferably a hydrogen bomb, but, a fissionable weapon will do using the plutonium or the uranium. And so this is of most concern, because if you are prepared as a family to survive a nuclear detonation, you would certainly be in good shape to survive a pandemic or a chemical weapon or a dirty nuclear weapon, because those are truly not the kinds of things that I would consider as being weapons of mass destruction. I believe nuclear weapons and biological entities have the most potential for killing the most people in the smallest amount of time, because there is a great segment of the world's population that has no longer any immunity to such things as smallpox. And smallpox, there's still smallpox virus storage around.
Hold up, Doc. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Wayne LeBaron. And Wayne, before we go on, I'd like to give you an opportunity to get out your website and for you to tell people how they can get copies of the books you've written.
Okay, I will do that. I really do not have a website, but you can reach me at my Yahoo site, email site. This is all lowercase, WDL1932. It's no spaces, WDL1932@yahoo.com.
Now, what is what does that stand for?
Well, that's my three initials and the year I was born. I just had a birthday 2 days ago.
All right, see? Okay, fine. So, WL...
WDL.
WDL.
1932.
Right.
At yahoo.com.
Okay, fine. Since you were born in 1932, huh? So that would make you... okay, fine. Well, you're a little younger than I am, so... anyway, but not that much.
I'm 75 as of 2 days ago.
Right, well, congratulations. Let's hope you continue living a good long while, and that we can talk again in 10 years from now.
That would be fine.
Under any circumstances. Our guest is Wayne LeBaron, and what about the books? Are they available?
Yes, they are. There are several books. one being published now. It's called The Five Deadly Arrows of Terrorism. It should be coming out late this month or next month.
Well, I hope maybe you'll get me a copy and we'll do a program on that. But I think that people have to just start thinking about it and hope and pray that it never happens. But if you're prepared, you can survive. If you're not prepared, why, of course, the panic that would ensue, the fact that people would not have thought of these various things, how to have a room that breathes, certainly the idea that, put forward by Ms. Chertoff and other people from FEMA, oh my goodness, what you want to do to protect yourself is duct tape and plastic. And, of course, what you'll want to do is seal the room up and that you'll be assured that you will suffocate to death.
That's
and
right.
Why don't they tell the people what to do? Why don't they tell them the simple things? Well, for the same reason, of course, that they haven't laid supplies in, that we do not have any shelters for people, that we do not have an effective program to protect the people, for the same reason that they have steadfastly refused to purchase the medicine that would protect people from radiation illness, although we've wasted billions and billions of dollars to enrich Donald Rumsfeld by purchasing Tamiflu, which kills people, which is ineffective against the bird flu. But don't you feel bad? Think how happy Mr. Rumsfeld feels of all the millions of dollars that he and his propaganda experts have gotten. So what they've done is they've been very, very busy buying Tamiflu, and of course, but not the things that you really need to protect you from the very real problems we have. And of course, the bird flu, unless they have actually engineered a lethal form of it, which they have the ability to do. And in fact, they've even gone out, as goes so far as to go up into the tundra in both Alaska and in Scandinavia to build up, to actually dig up bodies so they could get, the virus that killed so many people in 1918, to find out how they can make it more lethal virus. And they're actually working on that. They have. Let's hope and pray that they never release it on the American public, as they have with other diseases. So many of the diseases plaguing America today have been made in our own laboratories, unfortunately, but were perhaps accidentally released. Anyway, go ahead, Wayne. I mean, we're trying to get people to realize they have to be responsible for themselves. What about antibiotics? What can people do to get antibiotics?
Well, I would certainly think that if they have a physician that understands, and I have several that I know, they're very understanding and realize I want to protect myself and my family. And in order to do so, I'm a guy that is very prone to pulmonary infections, sinus infections. So I find a physician that's understanding and say, I need some antibiotics. Will you write me a few repeat prescriptions? Tell him what seems to work. If that won't work, then I would recommend that people go to a veterinary supply and purchase their antibiotics there. But I will have to give you a caution, and that is that you must pay very close attention to the dates of expiration on the tetracycline. Because once they expire, they become very, very toxic. There's the case history of a lady that went to visit her brother and her brother's wife, adults. She didn't feel very good. She had a sore throat. And so in the guest bedroom, guest bathroom, she found a bottle of tetracycline capsules. And she took one. And later that night, they rushed her to the emergency room, and she had acute liver and renal failure and died. The tetracyclines were out of date, and it only took one capsule.
Well, of course, would that carry over to doxycycline as well? Do we know that tetracycline would do that? Or would doxycycline be equally toxic?
No. Doxycycline is the one that is not toxic. The rest of the tetracyclines are.
All right, fine. Now, Chris, what antibiotics would you think that people should have on hand?
I believe, Leviquin tablets.
Leviquin? Well, what's Leviquin?
Leviquin is a very powerful antibiotic, and it's for the exotic organisms. One you don't usually run into in normal medical practice, you know. Some of the ones that are just a little offbeat. And the one I would recommend is Augmentin. That's a very powerful antibiotic for the gram-positive organisms. But you can buy those through veterinarians if they understand, and you tell them why you want to do it, and physicians will often, if they know you and your family, will give repeat prescriptions for some things like that. They're only to be used in time of emergency or when you're really sick, not indiscriminately. Vitamin C, multiple vitamin capsules. Store food that you like. Store food that's easily prepared. And I would recommend not storing very, very salty foods, because very salty foods increase the intake of water and fluids. That's something you're going to have to conserve, because it's my opinion that no one can store enough water for an emergency.
All right, fine. Of course, people would want to have those 55-gallon barrels, and that's a good way to do it. And of course, if something bad was going to happen, the first thing you'd do would be to fill up your sinks, you'd fill up your tubs, just to keep the water in there, and you could store a lot of water that way. The water in your hot water tank would be important to you.
That's right. I would like to tell you and your listeners an experience. We live in a beautiful mountain valley in central Utah, and our city water system is a closed system. In other words, we have one springs over in the West Mountain and then several large wells, and the aquifer is 100 feet down, but it's a good supply. Nevertheless, the city chlorinates the supply to kill the microorganisms, not very heavily. And I filled 3 55-gallon plastic barrels full of water. I put no chlorine bleach in, no iodine, or anything else. I just sealed them up. After 6 years, I wondered whether that water was any good, because I was going to have to remove those barrels and empty them. I moved to another area. The water in those three barrels was just as good as the day that I put it in there, but it was flat tasting, and that's because the oxygen had gone out of it. So I took two containers, like two large bottles or plastic containers or 2-quart bottles. I would draw half a quart out, pour from one bottle to the other several times, and this would reoxygenate the water. The taste came back. But the important part of this is that water was stored with no added chemical for 6 years and was still good. So this fallacy about having to change your water every 6 months that you have in storage is, to me, false.
All right, so I think there's just so many things people have to think of. There's water, food, medical supplies, but of course the important things would be to know how to shelter in place, what to do to the rooms, and certainly if you have a chimney, I'd never thought of it, but certainly you'd want to seal off that chimney and close down the damper or whatever you have inside there so air couldn't get in.
Right. Or same thing with the dryer vent going right to the outside. But the air is still breathable. It wouldn't be bad to toss in a few cans of spray deodorant for the air, because a family living in those conditions where the air is being exchanged, but minimally, it could get kind of ripe in there too, and you'd want to change the air periodically, or at least sweeten it up with some spray deodorants for the air. And I would go back. Air is of prime importance because a person only lives a few moments without it. Got to be safe. Got to be free from chemical poisons, biologicals, free from nuclear fallout, alpha, beta, and gamma emitters. Those are the three types, the three types of radiation that is so deadly to humans that would come from a nuclear weapon are alpha particles, beta radiation, and gamma radiation. Alpha particles would be stopped by a sheet of paper. Beta particles will be stopped by a very thin sheet of aluminum or metal, or even the walls of your home or the glass in your windows. Gamma radiation is another matter. It's very penetrative. The gamma rays are very, very small, but they're extremely penetrative. But the worst kind of radiation that a person can sustain in an injury is the kind that comes from nuclear disintegration, as well as the other three. It's protons. They're very large particles in comparison with the other three, alpha, beta, and gamma. And protons have an extreme affinity for living things, that is, for water, for human flesh, for vegetation. And when they hit, they do very great damage. Now, if a person is caught outside and there is a nuclear explosion, they need to get inside just as fast as possible. And the experience of the natives down in one of the islands in the Marshall Island chain during one of the tests, they sent one of our nuclear weapons off, and it was a ground burst, and it took a lot of the coral of that particular island, which comprised the island, and it vaporized it and blew it way up in the air, and then downrange on another island, that coral, that calcium carbonate, fell like snow. And the natives were out on the beach, and they were looking at this stuff falling down, and they didn't know what it was, and most of them didn't even bother to brush it off their shoulders and their hair, their arms. There were several young men that didn't like that stuff, so they went out and took a real quick swim in the ocean and came back out. Those that did not brush that radioactive particulate matter off them developed beta burns. You have deep sores on the skin, and it actually burns the skin. But those that went swimming in the surf had no such problems. They probably inhaled some of the alpha and beta particles and that from the fallout. And that's why, even till this day, those who were living during the time of the nuclear tests in the Marshall Islands, the South Pacific, are still monitored for cancers of various kinds. And the incidence of cancer in many of the natives in those areas is extremely high, especially thyroid cancer. But if you get inside, or if you are sealed inside with your family, you don't go outside, the bomb doesn't hit really close by, a nuclear radioactive dirty nuclear device is exploded fairly close by, or chemical or a biological weapon is released, you're still much more safe than you would be if you tried to evacuate the city. Do you have any questions about that?
No, I think that that's very, very apparent, and of course we recommend that people do get your DVD. We think it's really a very important adjunct to beginning to think ahead, and the most important thing is that feeling that I know what to do, I'm going to do it, I'm not going to panic. We're going to be here. We're going to be here for a time, and we're going to survive if we do the right things. And chances are, most Americans could survive. It would be the panic, that stark panic, and as people begin rushing around trying to get evacuate the towns, and then, of course, have run out of gasoline, have no place to go, and then, of course, there's a breakdown of society. And this is the big thing. You begin to get anarchy, and that's why they have to move in the troops, the military troops. That is, of course, why they have done away with the Pazzi Comitatus Act, in my opinion, because they know there's going to be problems. They're going to have to use American troops or foreign troops or mercenaries to control the population as they panic. Something big is in the offering. They would not be developing all the concentration camps, giving $385 million to Halliburton every year just to stand by. This is a four-year contract, $385 million every year to stand by, waiting to build concentration camps. Why would they do that? Well, they know what's coming. If you haven't seen our crop concentration camp special, the interviews there, you need to get it. You need to understand. Our guest has been Wayne LeBaron. And, of course, what we're trying to do is get people to begin to prepare to protect themselves. Well, Wayne, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay. I believe that one of the greatest protections we have is the God of Heaven. If we do well to our fellow man and live our Christian faith, I believe whether we live or die, it will not make any difference in the long run. But we can survive, and we can survive some terrible things. I suggest everyone look at this video on sheltering in place. It can save your life. I've given you my email site. If there are any questions of you out there, please feel free to send me an email, and I will try to respond as soon as I can. I want to thank you for the opportunity of having me on for the 2 hours. I hope I have done a credible job for you and your listeners.
Yeah, Wayne, you've done a great job, and I really appreciate so much your being willing to take the time to be with us, and of course to share the benefit of your years of research and thought on this, and of course your personal experiences. You've worked with radiation, you've had radiation illness, and we never did get into exactly how you got that. Was that a result of that time that you were sent up when the reactor got deactivated? Was that another time?
That was the reactor accident. I had another time, took a dose of radiation in my work daily. And then, not too many years ago, I developed colon cancer, and I had 10 billion, they treated me with radiation and chemotherapy at the same time. And I received treatment with 10 billion electron volts of photon radiation. That's about a threefold lethal dose over a period of 6 weeks. It was not fun.
I bet it wasn't. Well, I'm glad to hear you. Sounds like you're doing pretty well.
I am very well.
All right, well, fine. Well, I guess it's been Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist, and who certainly done a great deal of thinking about what needs to be done. We hope that many of our listeners out there will begin making preparations, hope and pray that you never need them. Certainly, I agree totally with Wayne's idea that in the final analysis, you know, what's really important is our relationship with the Lord, because that will determine what happens to all eternity. But right now, we have an obligation to tell others, to try to get them to be able to survive, because believe me, there is an organized effort not to do anything to help the American people. Wayne, God bless, and thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Doctor, and God bless and take care.
Good night. All right, fine. Well, our guest has been Wayne LeBaron. We hope that that you've enjoyed Wayne's commentary, and we simply would remind you that we do carry the video. It's called Sheltering in Place. We carry the book. It's entitled Nuclear War Survival Skills, and if you want to, you can get a kit with that that'll tell you how to build a radiation meter, but you have to get the book, because there's about 20 pages of I think it's page 216 and in that area of the book that gives you the directions on how to build this. But if you like a gadget, certainly it'll work and will give you an estimate of how much radiation is out there. If you have one of the expensive radiation kits, that's fine, but something like this is important. And then, of course, we do carry the potassium iodate. We have a wonderful book called Making the Best of Basics. That's Making the Best of Basics, which just tells you how you get along when you have to get back to the way things were 50 years ago. My wife has enjoyed the book a great deal and learned a lot from it. I would, too, if I had to. Fortunately, I have a very, very proficient wife, and she's has the ability to absorb all these techniques that were known 50 or 75 years ago by our grandfathers and great-grandparents. Just what you do with the basic fundamentals of wheat and grains and all of these things, and how you can get along without all the fancy things we have down at the food store. So if you're interested in the items we've talked about, the DVD, Making the Best of Basics, the book, Nuclear War Survival Skills, and then if you want to get the kit for that, you can. The book, Making the Best of Basics, the potassium iodate to protect your thyroid. All of these things are important to think about and hope and pray we never need them. But I will tell you that certainly if you listen to what Mr. Chertoff and the others are telling you, are they just trying to scare us to death? Or do they know something that the American people don't know? All I will tell you one thing. Whoever was responsible for what happened on September 11th is somebody who has no concern about human life. And I would simply to ask you to get a picture of the crash site in Pennsylvania. And what do you see where Flight 93 crashed? Nothing. Just a big hole in the ground. No airplane wreckage. No bodies. The tail of the airplane isn't there. There is certainly no evidence of the fuselage. There's no evidence of the luggage that was in the plane. How could you have a crash site that's just a big hole in the ground? If we've been lied to about anything, we've been lied to about everything. Get a picture of the crash site of flight number 93 at Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and simply ask yourself, how did that happen? This is September 11th. We dishonor the people who died that day if we don't try to find out what did happen. We do have a number of DVDs on the subject, on what happened that day. If you'd like to get more information, we have a 4-tape set on why did the buildings come down. 911 revisited or update. give it if you'd like in more information. Our telephone number 1-800-544-8927. Let me mention our 3 pamphlet set, Foreknowledge 911, a compilation of my newsletters, and then certainly the newsletters from August to December of last year at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. We are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember our all-day conference on October 28th. If you'd like to come, we'd love to see you there. Till tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.